Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Protecting the AFFH Rule. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. Please note this call is being recorded, and I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's call over to Thomas Silverstein. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Protecting the AFFH Rule press call. My name is Thomas Silverstein. I'm counsel in the Fair Housing and Community Development Project at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. This call is about proposed changes to HUD's Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule that would greatly weaken fair housing oversight throughout the United States. This proposed rule from Secretary Ben Carson was published in the Federal Register yesterday, kicking off a 60-day public comment period that will come to a close on March 16th. Our great speakers today will talk a bit more about the response of the civil rights community and the affordable housing and fair housing communities to that rulemaking process and the efforts to get folks to engage in the public comment process. Our first speaker today will be Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. She will be followed by Lisa Rice, President and CEO of the National Fair Housing Alliance. Next up after that will be Diane Yentel, President and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And then we will have Seamus Roller, Executive Director of the National Housing Law Project. Lastly, we'll have Maria Zamudio of Alliance for Housing Justice and Homes for All. Once our five speakers have discussed these proposed changes to the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule, we'll open up the line for questions from the press. And in addition to our speakers, we will also have Ed Gramlich from the National Low Income Housing Coalition on to answer any questions from the press. And with that, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
Good morning. My name is Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Today, the nation marks what would have been the 91st birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. It is bitterly ironic that HUD published this proposal just one day before the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, whose assassination led directly to the passage of the Fair Housing Act. The proposed rule at issue defies the legacy of Dr. King and, if finalized, would rip the heart out of one of our nation's most critical federal civil rights statutes. This is a shameful attempt by Secretary Ben Carson to write the issue of race out of the Fair Housing Act. Congress passed the Fair Housing Act in 1968 in significant part to address the legacy of state-sponsored residential racial segregation. Under the 2015 rule, communities had to do likewise. But under this proposal, HUD does not even mention the word segregation. I want to take a brief moment to sketch out what the proposed rule published yesterday would do. This proposed rule is an attack on one of the landmark civil rights achievements of the past decade, the 2015 Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule. The AFFH rule set out a framework used by local governments, states, and public housing agencies to enable them to take meaningful actions to overcome historic patterns of racial segregation. It supported their efforts to promote fair housing choice and to foster inclusive communities that are free from discrimination. In the 2 years during which HUD was fully implementing this rule, it was having a transformative and positive effect on how cities and counties make decisions and set local housing policy. However, the proposal published yesterday would eliminate any kind of meaningful fair housing planning requirement for states, local governments, and public housing authorities that receive HUD funds. under the 2015 rule that this proposal would supplant, HUD grantees were empowered with data to develop innovative local solutions to structural issues tearing apart at communities, such as entrenched segregation, gentrification, and displacement. Robust community engagement meant that marginalized groups long excluded from the planning process had a seat at the table to participate in the selection of those strategies. All of that would be eliminated under the proposed rule. In its place, Secretary Carson proposes a check-the-box exercise that focuses on increasing developer profits and not advancing fair housing. Experience shows that real accountability and oversight, not a bare minimum rational basis standard, is necessary to ensure that HUD's grantees comply with civil rights requirements. At every turn, Secretary Ben Carson has abdicated his responsibility to enforce the Fair Housing Act and to advance racial justice in housing. From his proposed rule to gut the Fair Housing Act's disparate impact standard, to his suspension of the small area fair market rent rule to help voucher holders move to higher opportunity neighborhoods, and to his proposed rule to split mixed status families living in subsidized housing, HUD's actions under Secretary Carson have been devastating and have turned the clock back on fair housing efforts across the nation. If finalized, this current proposal, like so many that have come before it, will harm groups that have historically been protected by the Fair Housing Act. African Americans and communities of color, people with disabilities, domestic violence survivors, and families with children. Instead of attempting to gut the Fair Housing Act's disparate impact standard, abandoning important reforms that empower families using housing choice vouchers to move to high opportunity neighborhoods, and trying to break up mixed status families, Secretary Carson could have been advocating for increasing HUD's budget to meet the demands of our nationwide housing crisis. He must drop this latest attempt to undermine civil rights and harm our communities. Thank you. At this point, I'm going to turn the floor over to Lisa Rice, who's president and CEO of the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Good morning, everybody. Our organization is a coalition of fair housing agencies who work on the ground every day to provide fair housing opportunities for millions of people. And I can say decisively that this proposal HUD has released does not affirmatively further fair housing. This proposed rule is not a fair housing rule at all. It is a deregulation rule cloaked in affordable housing language masquerading as a fair housing rule. This proposal entrenches segregated housing patterns and continues the status quo in which some communities are strengthened by taxpayer-supported programs and amenities, while other neighborhoods are starved and deprived of opportunities. This proposal presumes that, one, eliminating various regulatory controls will expand the supply of affordable housing, and two, expanding the supply of affordable housing will solve fair housing problems and issues. Neither presumption is true. AFFH requires jurisdictions and public housing authorities that receive HUD funding to take steps to end housing discrimination, dismantle segregation, and ensure neighborhoods have access to important resources. AFFH is meant to correct discriminatory housing practices as well as the lasting impacts of government and privately sponsored residential segregation. As housing discrimination reaches record highs, our government should be fighting to institute more protections, not gut the few that we have. NAHFA's 2019 annual Fair Housing Trends Report found that the number of housing discrimination complaints in 2019 was the highest it has been since 1995, when we first began collecting this data and issuing the annual report on fair housing trends. We also found that year over year, housing-related hate crime offenses increased by an alarming 14.7%. Roughly 10 years ago, NAFA released a series of reports detailing our multi-year, multi-city investigation that revealed an 87% rate of racial steering in real estate sales. More than a decade later, just a few weeks ago, a Newsday investigation found similar results across Long Island, showing a disturbing lack of progress in the real estate industry. What made steering easy was the fact that our communities are segregated. In fact, many of our neighborhoods are hyper-segregated. Segregation also drives disparities. People of color disproportionately live in communities with fewer educational, economic, food, health, banking, employment, and other critical resources that families need to thrive. In the United States, race is inextricably linked to place and opportunity. The AFFH mandate was designed to address this type of discrimination and inequality. We have the tools to make the changes, but we need the government to enforce the law. HUD's current attack on the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing mandate is the latest in a string of attempts to severely weaken the tools we have under the Fair Housing Act to detect and redress systemic discrimination. And Kristen listed a number of those attacks for you. Last fall, in addition, HUD proposed to severely restrict the disparate impact standard under the Fair Housing Act, a tool that has been used to combat discrimination for over 50 years. This latest attack on fair housing, as Kristen mentioned, comes just days before our country is set to honor the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was instrumental in creating the Fair Housing Act. Congress passed the Fair Housing Act with broad bipartisan support just 1 week after the assassination of Dr. King in 1968. The Fair Housing Act, including disparate impact and the AFFH mandate, is a direct gift from Dr. King to the people of this nation. In a way, you could say that he gave his life for this. It is a key part of his legacy and dream for a fair America. And we've all gathered here today because we will not see that dream deferred or denied. And now I'm going to turn it over to Diane Yentel, the president and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Good morning, everybody. I am here to join my colleagues and our partners in strongly opposing this latest proposed rule from HUD, which represents a complete retreat from efforts to undo historic government-driven patterns of housing discrimination and segregation throughout the United States. This rule underscores Secretary Carson's fundamental misunderstanding of the Fair Housing Act and its obligations, and his willful ignorance of the racist housing policies that created today's segregated communities. And while it's troubling and disappointing, this proposal isn't surprising. It's the latest of many attempts by Secretary Carson to weaken and disrupt HUD's fair housing duties. Under Secretary Carson's leadership, HUD has slowed or stopped most high-priority fair housing investigations and enforcements. He considered removing from HUD's mission statements references to promoting inclusive communities that are free from discrimination. After the city of Houston violated federal law by perpetuating racial segregation, Secretary Carson let the city off the hook by agreeing to a weak and largely unenforceable settlement. A court had to intervene to prevent Secretary Carson from reversing policies that make it easier for low-income families to move out of high-poverty neighborhoods. And as you've heard, he is working diligently to revise HUD's disparate impact rule, weakening a powerful tool to protect people and communities from discriminatory practices. This latest proposed rule entirely removes race from consideration in a supposed fair housing rule, and instead it focuses entirely on housing supply. But even there, this rule is an empty shell. It advances neither fair housing nor affordable housing objectives. Simply increasing the supply of market rate housing, as Secretary Carson proposes, will not result in housing that is affordable to low-income or extremely low-income people, and it does nothing to increase access to housing for people of color, people with disabilities, and other people who are protected under the Fair Housing Act. The federal government has an essential role in advancing fair access to housing in communities with long histories of racist and discriminatory housing policies and practices. And public housing agencies have a critical role to play. In the 50 largest metropolitan areas, voucher-assisted families of color, mostly Black and Latino, are likelier to live in neighborhoods that are, as HUD terms them, minority-concentrated than other low-income renters of color who don't receive federal assistance. So this suggests that the agencies administering the voucher program may be exacerbating segregation. But Secretary Carson's proposed rule would absolve PHAs of any responsibility to reverse these harmful patterns. And Secretary Carson has suggested in the past that he would use the AFFH rule to lessen restrictive zoning practices that can inhibit affordable housing production in certain communities, which is an important goal given the deep racial disparities that are created by some local zoning laws. But even here, he fails, choosing to instead let localities off the hook by explicitly stating that there will be no consequences if they keep their restrictive and often racist zoning laws. So for all of these reasons and more, the National Low Income Housing Coalition joins our partners in urging HUD to abandon this ill-conceived proposal, to reinstitute the 2015 AFFH rule, and to resume its implementation. Rather than attempting to weaken it, Secretary Carson must work to vigorously enforce the obligation to further fair housing in our country. So now I will turn it over to Seamus Roller, who is Executive Director of the National Housing Law Project.
Thank you, Diane. The National Housing Law Project works with legal services attorneys and advocates around the country, protecting housing rights of tenants and of homeowners. And I think as we talk about this, there are so many sort of terrible ramifications of the rule, but I think it's also important to call out just how absurd it is that, that this rule that came out so much of the history of racial segregation sort of, manages to leave racial segregation and racially concentrated poverty out of the rule, which is either a tremendous leap of imagination or just plain indifference to the law on behalf of the administration. And it happens at this sort of particular moment when the scholarship on racial segregation and the scholarship on the sort of other ways in which racial segregation has been perpetuated over time has gotten much stronger. There's a lot of popular scholarship around this area now, and we really understand, I think, in a way that, we maybe didn't before, just sort of the role that government had in creating segregation and then in perpetuating it over time. And Diane hit on the sort of importance of just exempting housing authorities and the huge role that they have in providing housing opportunities to the lowest income people in our country. And sort of to think that they don't have a role in furthering fair housing is just also a sort of ridiculous proposition. One of the things that I really want to highlight, too, that's happening as HUD retreats around thinking about fair housing is also this time when the housing market is rapidly changing. when, you know, a rental market that was once dominated by small landlords is now being dominated by huge corporations. And then you have all of these properties that are owned by LLCs and shell companies, in which we, you know, at a very fundamental level, don't even understand who the landlords are anymore. At the same time, you have huge tenant screening companies that are coming in and, you know, pulling in huge sets of, you know, fundamentally flawed data that they're using to screen out large parts of the population from rental housing. And that's changing what sort of fair housing means and what fair housing enforcement needs to look like within our nation to keep up with the ways in which data and large corporations are cementing racial segregation from the past into the data systems of the future. And that's something that requires that HUD take a leadership role and help jurisdictions take a leadership role around these issues. And their retreat at this particular time is going to have dire consequences, both for homeowners and for renters into the future. Lastly, I just want to reiterate that this rule is neither an affordable housing rule nor a fair housing rule. It's just part of a deregulatory agenda, and one that looks to sort of undermine tenants' rights through things like trying to punish jurisdictions for rent control, for supporting workers' rights, for supporting environmental regulations, and that's fundamentally not what anyone intended, Democrats or Republicans, at the time the Fair Housing Act was passed. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Maria Zamudio, who is with the Alliance for Housing Justice and Homes for All.
Hi, good morning. My name is Maria Zamudio, and I'm the Associate Director with the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco, and I'm here with Homes for All and Alliance for Housing Justice. So I live and work in the San Francisco Bay Area, where we have three of the top 10 most expensive rental markets in the country, and we're also experiencing a massive boom of new housing construction, most of it happening at the luxury levels, anywhere from $3,000 to a one-bedroom and up. And we're also seeing the negative impacts of corporate speculators buying up and controlling our housing market, those impacts being lack of responsiveness regarding repairs, artificially inflated high rents, or just blatantly keeping units empty when so many people need a roof in our region. So for us, we're very clear, right, that more giveaways to developers and billionaires, many of whom are the architects of the housing crisis, not just in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, but nationally, will not solve this crisis. Trump and his administration is attempting to completely do away with policies that everyday people use to fight for and protect the housing stock we can still afford, such as rent-controlled and HUD-subsidized units. So while he's also mandating that cities respond to homelessness, a manifestation of the housing crisis, in an incredibly callous and inhumane way. So together, this writes a future for our cities, regions, and ultimately our nation, where we're unable to actually address, let alone solve, the crisis that make everyday people suffer while corporations continue to make millions. Our communities do not accept this future, and we know that these proposed changes have nothing to do with fair housing. It is nothing less than Trump and his administration simply trying to remove regulations, as other folks have already said, and allow his developer friends to profit off of discrimination, exploitation, and more displacement. And so we see through these false solutions. Our communities at this time are also organizing and winning, from winning new rent control policies to reclaiming homes owned by corporations that sit vacant, to having to fill in the gaps locally on investment for affordable housing that HUD continues to divest in. We are actually doing much of the work that our government should actually be focusing on, which is why we say that ask and demand that the federal government follow our lead instead of gutting fair housing protections. HUD and the federal government should invest in policies that protect tenants, such as rent control, just cause eviction protections, or maybe fully fund and rehabilitate and maintain public housing, or, you know, also how about repealing the Faircloth Amendment and creating millions of new units of social housing for folks who need it, that are safe, dignified, and sustainable for our planet and our people. We think that really these are the things our government should be focused on, not undoing the legacy of our civil rights ancestors, especially not at this time, especially not in the middle of a housing crisis. And we see through these false solutions, we see this as being about deregulation and nothing more. Thank you all. And so now I will open it up to questions.
Thank you, Maria. And again, this is Thomas Silverstein, counsel from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. I just wanted to briefly mention before we fully open it up for questions that Kristen Clark from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law and Diane Yentel have had to drop off. So I will be answering questions on behalf of the Lawyers Committee, and Ed Gramlich, Senior Policy Advisor at the National Low Income Housing Coalition, will be answering questions on behalf of National Low Income Housing Coalition. So with that, we would open it up for questions. Thank you.
Certainly, and at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, that is star and one to ask a question. We'll pause a moment to allow any questions to queue. And once again, that is star and one to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Josh Cohen with a Freelance Reporter. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just wondering what you think it will take to undo the new proposed rule. Is it just public pressure to get HUD to change their mind, or is there any sort of, what will it take and what sort of hope you have that you can get HUD to change this rule?
Thank you. Is there anyone who would like to kick off an answer to that question amongst the speakers?
Sure. This is Lisa Rice from the National Fair Housing Alliance. We are mounting, our organizations, our coalition is mounting a very broad-based campaign to push back against this proposal, similar to the coalition that we forged to fight back against HUD's very dangerous disparate impact proposal. We're seeing this across not just in HUD, but other federal governments. And what we have found is that when we're able to coalesce a broad range of voices to talk about the dangerous outcomes of what the Trump administration is proposing, we see some successes. We see them being forced to rethink these proposals. And so that's what we're doing here. We're bringing together municipalities, jurisdictions, affordable housing providers, as well as organizations like ours, civil rights organizations, consumer protection organizations, and the like, in order to explain how the proposed rule that HUD has developed is really going to actually harm many different stakeholders. So that's a very key thing. And of course, if necessary, then we will have to take legal action. But we are hoping that our efforts to educate this administration about this very harmful proposal will make them rethink and reinstate the 2015 AFFH rule.
Thanks, Lisa. Would any of the other speakers like to add any additional information in response to that question?
This is Seamus Roller from National. You know, I think the one other thing I would add on to that is just that, you know, from a legal perspective, one, the regulations that an agency develops have to be related to the underlying statute. And I think that there's a really strong argument both, you know, within the legal realm and also within the public realm that this particular, you know, rule doesn't bear any resemblance to the underlying or relationship to the underlying statute.
Are there any other, additional questions on the line?
Just as a reminder, that is star and one to ask a question. And we'll go next to Kristen Capps with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you have any sense on how many comments have been submitted under the disparate impact rule and what mobilization strategies you're preparing that might be different for this fair housing rule.
Thanks, Kristen.
Hey, this is
I was just going to say briefly, because I happen to have the page open, that there were 45,758 comments submitted on the disparate impact rule, an overwhelming number of comments, the vast majority of which were in opposition to the rule. But I'm going to turn it over to Lisa for further context on that.
Oh, no, Tom. Go ahead. You said just what I was going to say. The only thing I will add succinctly is that 45,000-plus number represented over a 2,000% increase in the number of comments that were submitted on the advanced notice of proposed rulemaking for disparate impact. And I think we saw that 2,000-plus percent increase in the submissions and comments on the final proposed rule because of our mobilization. And we have committed to engaging in those same kinds of activities to gin up opposition to this proposed rule.
Thanks, Lisa. Other questions on the line?
And there are no further questions at this time.
Hello, this is Lisa from the National Fair Housing Alliance. Can I just make one additional point? Because
a lot of
times we're asked, well, what does this really mean on the ground? And are jurisdictions and public housing authorities really still engaging in efforts to that would hinder the advancement of fair housing? And I just want to proffer up a couple of real live examples to help make the point live. And I want to talk about three cases. One is the denial of water services to a predominantly African-American community called Coal Run in Zanesville, Ohio. For over 50 years, the city and the county used federal funds in contradiction to the affirmatively furthering fair housing mandate, used federal funds to build and develop municipal water services to predominantly white communities while denying water services to this predominantly African-American community. And in fact, it was so devious that water lines would be drawn up to Coal Run, around Coal Run, and then back out beyond the neighborhood. So it was very clear. I mean, if you look at a map of the water lines, what you see is a donut hole where there is no water service, and that donut hole was this African-American community of Coal Run. Direct violation of the AFFH mandate. And even though HUD knew that Zanesville was engaging in this discriminatory practice, it still continued to provide grants to the city, even though they were discriminating. The 2015 rule would have stopped that from happening. And so the rule that was enacted in the 1990s enabled this discrimination to happen and to continue. The 2015 rule would have stopped this kind of discrimination from happening. What the HUD administration is proposing would allow for this kind of discrimination to continue. And in fact, in our analysis of HUD's proposed rule, what HUD is proposing now is actually worse than what we had than the rule that was promulgated in the 1990s. The second example I wanted to lift up is just the persistent problem of sexual harassment of women in public housing facilities and in facilities that are run by public housing authorities. A great example of that is a case that was resolved in 2016 in Baltimore. That case was led by NAACP LDF. a number of women. This is a systemic example of sexual harassment of women in public housing facilities. The sexual harassment had been going on for years and years and years. The public housing authorities' employees, their maintenance workers, their maintenance staff, and their management staff, et cetera, were sexually exploiting women in contradiction to the AFFH rule. And so to Diane's point and Seamus's point, this is why we cannot let public housing authorities off of the hook. They have got to be held accountable. And then the last example I'll lift up is a situation that is currently pending. In the city of Houston used federal funds to build water drainage systems in a discriminatory fashion. The water drainage system actually caused an increase in flooding in communities of color. Over 90% of African-American homeowners in Houston live in areas with an open ditch drainage system. So these kinds of things are the kinds of things, and the things that my colleagues have mentioned heretofore, these are the kinds of things that the 2015 rule was designed to stop. And we cannot let the Trump administration implement what is essentially a non-fair housing rule and disguise it as something that would advance fairness and equality in our neighborhoods when it would not.
Thank you, Lisa. I want to check one more time to see if there are any questions on the line.
And once again, just as a reminder, it's star and one to ask a question. It appears that there are no questions at this time.
Okay. Would any of the other speakers like to provide some closing remarks before we conclude?
Tom, I just want to point out that a number of the organizations are together on the campaign. The website is fightforhousingjustice.org.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you, Seamus. So thank you to all the members of the press who joined the call today. We will be following up with a release and a press release and the audio of the call shortly after. As Seamus just mentioned, the comment period is open, and we're working hard to ensure that there's really extensive and robust engagement in this process. And that comment period, again, runs until March 16th. The URL, which Seamus just mentioned, is fightforhousingjustice.org. It will have a comment template for people to be able to submit comments, and will also be continually updated with new information and resources explaining the impact of this proposed rule on communities across the country. So thank you again for joining, and we appreciate your interest in this important development and this important issue.